of cream, red roses too.
Hello, this is Ed Cohen, editor of GlobalBusinessNews.net, and your broadcast host today of GlobalRadioTalkShow.com. Coming to you today from Fairfax, Virginia and San Diego, California, our very special guest is Charles Brooks, Vice President, Client Executive, Department of Homeland Security for Xerox Federal Solutions. So Chuck is an executive in the Washington, D.C. business scene, and it's a rather unique environment. We're going to ask him about Washington, D.C., and about doing business inside the Washington Beltway, and about his specialty, which is cybersecurity. Charles, Chuck, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me, Ed.
I'm really honored to have you. So, Chuck, tell us a little bit about your position. It's a long title, Vice President, Client Executive, Department of Homeland Security, Federal Government Solutions for Xerox Federal Solutions, LLC.
It's sort of a unique Washington title. Since I came out of the Department of Homeland Security and I'm become a Washingtonian in terms of policy and business, they created a position called Client Executive, where my role is primarily to feedback information on what's happening in the agency, at DHS, what are the opportunities, what are the policy changes, and who are the key people to meet. It's sort of like a thought leader, but also business development.
Okay, so now your background, though, is on the Hill inside Congress, isn't that right?
That's correct. Actually, I came out here, I'm a Chicagoan originally, and I came out here like every other person, thinking I'd do an internship and go back to where I came from. But I caught the Potomac fever, and I've been out here for many years now. And one of my first roles here was to work on the Hill for the late Senator Arlen Specter, and it was a tremendous experience. I spent almost 8 years working in various capacities for him in foreign affairs and business and technology and defense issues, and also helping run a couple of his campaigns. So it really educated me to how the city works and where to go and how to do it.
Your specialty, however, has been in cyber security. Is that correct? Could you explain that more?
Yeah, sure. Well, cybersecurity, when we created the Department of Homeland Security, I mean, we looked at the key issues of really were the weapons of mass destruction, RAD, nuke, chembio, and we also looked at the threat from the cybersecurity arena. And back in 2003, it wasn't as much of a threat as is now. We've evolved rapidly into a connected world, almost in Malthusian terms. Every day we're getting more and more connected and more technologically advanced. So cybersecurity has made us all very vulnerable, and I've spent the last several years learning about how it operates in the critical infrastructure capacity and where the policy is going and what roles our federal agencies are playing, particularly DHS.
So yesterday there was a power outage. Does that have anything to do with security?
Yes, very much so. You know, you brought up a good question because one of the most vulnerable parts of our critical infrastructure is the national grid. Most of the grid was built in the 1970s, and the equipment around it is very old, the transformers, and it doesn't take a terrorist act, or even for that matter, a hacker, which could be very possible and plausible. It's happened before, to cut power to a power station. It could be a sun flare that could knock us back into the 19th century. So we're very vulnerable in there, and that's one of the areas that Congress is looking at, and particularly a congressman named Pat Meehan, who runs a subcommittee, looking at the public-private cooperation and defending for cybersecurity, because it's 90% of the critical infrastructure. Our financial community, our communications, our entertainment, our transportation is owned by the private sector, not the government. So to be able to protect it, you need both government and private cooperation.
Isn't it true that cell phones don't work if there's a disruption, but landlines might?
Well, that is true. I mean, it's happened a lot, and people have found that out in earthquakes, that the towers go down and you can't communicate. However, usually text messages for some reason do get through. But one of the biggest problems in all natural disasters has been communications and interoperability, whether it be the 9/11 tragedy or whether it be Hurricane Katrina. The first thing that happened with the first responders is they couldn't talk to each other. So there's a lot of new types of technology that are being tried, including voice over internets and also landlines again, and basically also resilient cell towers that don't get destroyed in those type of situations.
Okay, well, let's drill down about Washington, D.C. As a place of business. But before we do that, what is Xerox Federal Solutions?
Sure. Xerox Federal Solutions is a part of Xerox. Actually, we're an independent LLC, but a part of Xerox, whose focus is to basically sell service and products to the federal government, which is a huge market. And, you know, Xerox itself is a huge company, a $22 billion company with in 160 countries. But most of the work that we do is on the commercial side. You know, a lot of it's what you know, the Xerox carpet, but it's also IT. It's also running the easy passes and et cetera, things like that. But the federal part really deals with basically providing solutions, whether it be data analytics or whether it be business process outsourcing to government agencies. And Xerox has positioned itself because of its commercial experience that now the government is looking for best practices and companies that have succeeded in the private sector more than just relying on companies that are totally government-centric.
You recently published an article which caught my attention. It was published in the Capitol Hill newspaper called The Hill. The theme was navigating the four pillars of Washington, D.C. So what's a pillar, and why are there four, and what's it all about?
That's a good question. I just refer to them as pillars because it's really what everything stands on in terms of getting anything done, whether it be business or whether it even be diplomacy in Washington. And when I first came here, it wasn't the city it is now. It's really evolved. New York used to be the only center of financial activity and commerce, and now Washington has sort of taken a secondary role and in many places even a leading role in that area. But the four pillars that I refer to in my article in The Hill are the government, which is basically the federal government, the legislative branch on Capitol Hill we mentioned, the White House, the judiciary, and even the state and local, where the governors are centered here. All the states have representation here. And, of course, there's Washington, D.C. And then the other pillars, you know, very quickly, which I'll go into more detail, which is the policy pillar, which is, you know, the advocacy groups, the 6,000 associations, the think tanks, the universities such as Johns Hopkins, American University, and George Washington and Georgetown that are here. And the commercial sector, the other pillar, is really the financial community, the Chamber of Commerce, the World Bank, the IMF, and a lot of the trade groups associated with the embassies. And the final pillar, which is one that we're on right now, is media. And media has also become a very much of a focus in Washington, where all the major networks and newspapers are represented here at the National Press Club, and where the new media has also taken center stage and sometimes dictates how things are done in Washington.
Is it about who you know or who knows you, or is there something else going on that we should know about?
It always involves those components because you have to be able to navigate anything. You have to know who to talk to and who to network with. So it is sometimes who you know. What's changed is it used to be more of an old boys club that you had to sort of be at the same places and be at the same restaurants and bars and be in the same clubs as people. But now with social media and the digital world, things have changed. People are much more networked in through LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, where they're able to develop sort of relationships and know the backgrounds of people almost instantly. So that kind of networking has sort of replaced, you know, who you know. And, of course, what you know is really a product of where you've been. And by participating in these pillars, whether you work in academia, you work in the advocacy world and as a lobbyist and association, or you you know, serve in government, all those credentials give you opportunities to open doors and to work the scene in Washington.
Okay, and your own experience in these pillars?
Yeah, my own experience is that I've actually had the fortune to be in all of them. I started out here really in government, came and worked here for the Voice of America as a young kid, and found myself writing speeches for the director after the first week, and then also, as I mentioned earlier, worked on the Hill in the legislative branch for Senator Arlen Specter, and then again in the federal branch for the Department of Homeland Security. So I've had quite a bit of experience in government. In the private sector, I've had the fortune of running my own consulting firm, being an entrepreneur, and also working in senior executive capacities for a company called SRA International, a $2 billion company, and, of course, Xerox. So I've had experience there. And then I was also in academia, which is sort of molds everything together. I spent 2 years teaching Homeland Security in Congress at Johns Hopkins SAIS campus and found that a really valuable experience. And then I guess my media experience is being very active on LinkedIn. I run several of the largest groups on LinkedIn and have 30,000 first connections, and I'm very active and very active on Twitter too, in sort of an early adopter to this new media platforms.
On average, how much time a day do you spend on the new media? I know I'm just addicted to it now. It's growing.
It really is addictive, and it's I find it really valuable for what I do in business too. So I spend more time than I used to, because if you're meeting with someone, you could just look up their profile on LinkedIn, or if you need to find someone that you need to talk to in government, you could find someone that knows them on LinkedIn. So I use it during the day, but at night, I come back and sometimes, like I say, it's addictive, and spend a couple hours where my wife will say, get off that, get off LinkedIn, get off. But it is addictive because it's interesting. You learn a lot by reading posts, and it's amazing the type and quality of posts and the type of people that are posting things. It's like being in university and learning again sometimes for me. So, I love it.
You're right. And I find myself getting connected to white papers and surveys that otherwise I would never come across.
Yeah, it's educational, and I think it keeps your mind sharp, too. I think there are drawbacks, of course, because you see a lot of the younger children, addicted to their smartphones and texting back and forth and have a short attention spans, but I think the benefits of social media far outnumber that, and it's enabled the networking to really take center stage and to benefit everybody in business and policy and government everywhere.
Tell me about the pillars now. It sounds like it's opaque, that the system in Washington is really complicated and a closed society and very, very protective of relationships. Am I wrong in assuming that?
Well, I think that used to be more of the old Washington. I think there's always has been a lot of truth to that. But I think the barriers have been broken down, and I think it's been broken down because the town is sort of transformed. It's transformed by, the growth and the well-being of the commerce situation here. It's one of the most expensive cities in the world now, but there's top restaurants. There's like I said, all the embassies are here, all the international institutions, and then the 6,000-plus associations. So it's really become a place where people do a lot of things and multitask, and there's a lot of different social scenes here. So I don't think that the old boys' club, the cigar-smoking back rooms, is part of it anymore. And as a matter of fact, there's so much more transparency in the last 10 years because everything is instant online on the Internet. So, you can't operate that anymore. So it has changed.
So for others who are not familiar with the area but have an expertise in something, how do you navigate? What are the first steps?
I think the first thing is knowing what you have an expertise in. If you come here and let's say you have an expertise in cybersecurity, for instance, what I know, you find out right away that there's a variety of organizations that are involved with the top policymakers in cybersecurity. You get involved, you go meet with some of those people, you publish, you write, you talk, you go to events, and you find yourself in a circle of people like-minded. Second thing you may want to do is, okay, I've got this expertise. Do I want to, go and use it in a practical manner and get some experience on the Hill to see how things are done and go and work as a legislative assistant or as an outside advisor, assist a congressman or a senator in that area? And then, of course, if there's a business case to be made for it, there's a lot of markets here, the government being one of the largest markets in the world, if not the largest. And to be able to take your expertise and go work for a firm and say, I have the ability to access decision makers in the government and decision makers in the corporate world is a logical next step. And again, it goes back to the four pillars. By being able to build your credentials in each of them or two or three of them, you build up an understanding, you build up a reputation, and more important, you build up a group of other like-minded people and experts and contacts in that area that could be really, really useful.
Let's jump aside now, and in summary, what are your thoughts on the technologies that you write about and think about and the hottest area and where is the economy going? I would think there's so much work to do and so much to do everywhere in the country on rebuilding roads and pipes and electrical systems and modernizing the train stations and airport. This is like a New Deal kind of structure. I mean, it's a huge amount of money it'll take, and yet it will build up, in my opinion, it will build up America to be right on the cusp of the cutting edge going forward. What do you think about all that?
Oh, I agree with your assessment 100%. We are at the cusp, and it's in nanotechnologies, it's in 3D printing, it's in revamping our infrastructure with the new technologies and capabilities we have with supercomputing and quantum computing and staying connected mobility. Everyone has the ability now to operate and do their commerce on a smartphone. And then I think one of the other outside factors that may get us there quickly is the global economic situation with the falling oil prices has allowed us to reconsider now investing in some of this infrastructure rather than be depending upon putting a lot of our efforts and paying for fuel. So I think we may have a boom to our economy, and that will allow us to basically continue in some of these areas in technologies which are basically impacting every sector, including healthcare and financial and in entertainment.
Well, Chuck, thanks very much for being our guest today. There's so much more we could talk about. Would you please consider coming back again in the new year, and we could drill down on more topics relevant to your career and your outlook, and we'll be following you on LinkedIn and in other social media.
Oh, Ed, thank you for having me. Absolutely. I'd love to be your guest, and happy holidays to all your listeners.
Yeah, and to thank you. We've been talking with Charles Brooks, Vice President, Client Executive, Department of Homeland Security, Federal Government Solutions, with Xerox Federal Solutions, based in Fairfax, Virginia. This is Ed Cohen, Editor of Global Business News, and your host today on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com, signing off from Old Town, San Diego.
Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful